Okay, I think I've got this right now.
Okay.
I've got another special guest, and they're both from kind of the same area of the country, because I had Doug Millar on, but now I've got Orlene
Kurla.
Okay. And she is president of the Eagle Forum of California. And I forgot to grab something right. What? So I'll inform my audience here about her background here in just a second, because I printed it out and then I walked off without it. So here we go. And I do want to state that the views expressed in this program are those of myself and of my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHAN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And if anybody wants to listen to any of these interviews, they're archived at www.givemesometruth.info. Orlene and her husband, Kurt Curley, I'm never going to get this right, are the parents, because I've been mispronouncing it all day long to myself, so are the parents of 5 sons, 1 daughter, and 4 grandchildren. Miss Kurla grew up on a farm in rural Idaho, attended Idaho Falls High School, and was selected to serve as Miss Idaho Falls. After graduation from Brigham Young University, she later taught school in speech, drama, and journalism at a junior high in Idaho Falls, and her husband is an administrator at Sonoma State University, and they live on acreage outside of Santa Rosa. And since 2002, Orlene has been serving as the state president of the Eagle Forum of California. And Eagle Forum is a conservative, pro-family, pro-traditional values organization started by Phyllis Schlafly back when she was fighting the Equal Rights Amendment. And Orlene has served as president of Concerned Citizens of Sonoma County, Parents Involved in Education, vice president of Santa Rosa Republican Women Federated, and editor for their newsletter, and continues as president of the Sonoma County Eagle Forum. And she served 3 years as the elected member of the Sonoma County Republican Central Committee. And in 2006, she started an organization in Sonoma County to protect rural property rights in Sonoma County Land Rights Coalition, and has served as president. And she's honored by the Pacific Justice Institute as their State 2006 Faith and Community Award recipient for her many years in voluntary service in her community, county, state. And Orlene has been a guest speaker for conservative organizations throughout California, Nevada, Utah, Idaho, and for the Eagle Forum conferences in St. Louis, Missouri, and Washington, D.C., and has served as counselor and speaker at many constitutional summer camps for teenagers. She's been interviewed on television and talk radio programs, and is the author of many published articles and books looking at Lincoln, A History and Guide to Lincoln, Nebraska, The Golden Rule School, Character Education, A Closer Look at Real ID Act of 2005, and your latest, then, I think this is a little older because you've got another book out, or you're working on several, and your latest release book was By Stealth and Deception, USA Transformation and Its Parallel to the European Union. So, Orlene?
Correct.
What?
That's correct.
Right. And so, anything else that you want? You have some more books that you've come out with since then, right?
There's one that's just about to be published in book format. It was kind of in just manuscript format, called Just Say No to Big Brother Smart Meter.
Okay.
And that's what I've been researching and writing about for the past year and a half.
And then you've got
part of the battle we've been fighting here in Northern California.
Right. And then you've got one you're working on, Agenda 21, and its many tentacles for global control.
That's right.
So you're quite an activist, obviously.
Oh, there's just so many battles to fight. And once I start researching, then a whole new world opens up, and you get more and more and more information. And usually my books start with just a little 6-page article.
Well, it sounds like there's some real powerhouses out there in Northern California, because, I mean, just getting introduced to the people that Deborah Tavares has gotten to know in her activism, and there's plenty to be active about, apparently, at this point in time. So
very much so.
So how would you like to go ahead and get started? Did you want to talk about the UN aspect, or did you want to get into the smart meters, or how would you like to go?
Whatever you would like to.
I usually let my guests do it.
All right. Well, they really, everything is coming under the title of United Nations Agenda 21. The smart meters is just one branch of that.
Right.
And the mission statement of Agenda 21 is to have total control of every aspect of man's life and how he interacts with the environment. And, of course, the smart grid, the smart meters, will be controlling our energy, and that's definitely one of the ways that we interact with the environment. And that's the last chapter of my book, Just Say No to Big Brother's Smart Meter. I really go into this, how the whole thing is connected with Agenda 21. And a lot of people here fighting the battle in California to stop smart meters, they won't go that far. They just don't want to connect it to this global monster that it's connected to. But Deborah and I go that far. and I think that's the only way you can really fight it is when you connect all of the puzzle pieces.
Well, she's got, you know, I'm getting constantly, daily, emails from, you know, the different issues that are going on around this control mechanisms that are out there in every aspect of our lives. And Agenda 21 is would you call it the political aspect? What would you?
I would say it's all encompassing. It's not only political. Okay. The people who are involved in this and really believe it, it's spiritual to them as well. They truly are worshiping Mother Earth. This is their mother Gaia, and they do not believe in the God of the creation that most of us believe in, the Judeo-Christian foundation of our nation. Most of them are very steeped in the New Age and worshiping this Mother Earth or Mother Gaia, and the sad thing is that's what is being promoted in our public schools, especially now since in 1962, God was taken out of our schools. We were no longer allowed to have any prayer. And as a substitute teacher here in California for almost 20 years, I have just seen so much of this pushing of the environment and pushing of really almost earth worshiping. We're not allowed to talk about or pray to God in our schools like we used to could, but I've seen a teacher take the kids out and they circle a tree and pray to the tree.
You know, one of the things that I find interesting in that aspect, because when I was just, you know, in some of the interviews that I've done in the past and earlier, that you find those that are the Illuminati or certain organizations of those that are in the control of, you know, of not only our governments, but you know, the global governments. You wonder if that's just kind of a mask, because it sounds to me that they're more into. There's a heavy amount of Satanism that seems to be taking place there.
There really is. In my book, By Stealth and Deception, I have a whole chapter on the Illuminati, when my husband and I were in Germany. My husband is from Germany. We lived there for 3 years. And a German magazine was just writing about some lost journal that they had found that had belonged to a leader of the Illuminati. And during the time of Hitler, it had been squelched and kept hidden. And then finally, after the Berlin Wall was brought down, this journal was allowed to be released. It was then in East Germany. And so they wrote about it and it was a normal German magazine, one that you would find on the shelves of most bookstores. And And it told this journal, was this man actually said how, as a member of the Illuminati, he was very much involved in the occult, and they would have satanic rituals. And he then told of how he had participated in starting the French Revolution, and what a success that had been. And so they were very much, I think, involved in Satan worshiping way back when, and I think they still are.
Right. I mean, a lot of the symbology is all around us, and when people that I have been acquainted with in the radio community and whatever, and much further than that, but those that have studied up on some of this stuff, when you start getting into the background of some of these entities and symbols and whatever, they sometimes have a double meaning. Sometimes they have more than one name. But when you start looking into the background of it, there is something else that seems to be overriding, and that there is some kind of worship of another entity. And so, go ahead.
Oh, I agree. And that the Illuminati members had double names. I think Adam Weishaupt's name was Spartacus, and they all kind of had a double name, and they love the mystery, and they love secret things, and that's how they get a lot of people hooked in their organization, and I think it's still going on.
Uh-huh. Now, you're out in an area that is noted for some of their summer camps meetings, right?
Yes, the Bilderberger, or not, well, that's what Deborah calls it, Bilderberger West, but it's the Bohemian Grove, that's just about a half an hour from where I live.
And they're known to have these, I think this takes place, what, in July, something like that?
Yes,
they meet up.
It takes two weeks in July. I think it's just the end of July.
Uh-huh. So, getting into with the Agenda 21 and the UN, what would you like to go with that? I mean, and cover some of the information in your books, because, I mean, you know, and if you got any websites or anything that you would like to mention.
Yes. In fact, we're going to be putting on a big conference here for Eagle Forum. Our state conference will be on Earth Day, which is April 20th, 21st, and it's going to be Agenda 21 Part 2, because last year we also had the entire conference devoted to this, because we think it is probably the biggest thing that our nation is facing right now, and most people still don't even know what it is, but when you see how it's taking over city government, our county government, it's just amazing, and how they're trying to get people off their rural land and stacked and packed inside the cities. So that will be April 20th and the 21st in Sacramento at the Doubletree Hotel. And if you go to our website, www.eagleforumofcalifornia, you'll be able to see the speakers. I hope it is up. My webmaster had somehow missed getting the information up this morning, so I hope he got it up by now. But if not, it'll be there tomorrow. But we've been fighting so many issues. My husband and I live on rural land in Santa Rosa, as you said in the introduction. How I began to face this head-on in 2006, we received a little postcard in the mail from a nice realtor who decided to take it upon herself to warn us that they were going to start the General Plan 2020, which was what they had planned for the year 2020 for our county. And it involved all of this amazing, really, taking of rural land. Every creek that ran through people's property, there would be a 100-foot setback on both sides where you could not plow your land, couldn't plant it, could do nothing with it except pay taxes on it. And for some of the wineries out here, the Kendall Jackson Winery, 5,000 acres of their land would have been taken with, because they own so much throughout Sonoma County, and they have so many creeks that run through it. Well, we have a creek through our land as well, and, you know, to have a 100-foot setback on both sides, that takes a lot of your property. So we attended this hearing to fight this and discovered so much more was part of this. You could not have a fence unless it was a wildlife-friendly fence, 18 inches off the ground and no higher than 4 feet. And one man who heard this spoke at the hearing and said, that's not a fence, that's a clothesline. That won't keep anything out or anything in. And then we found out that they also had planned that throughout any area that was called a scenic corridor, there would be a 100-foot setback on both sides. Well, our entire Sonoma County would be called a scenic corridor. Everything is scenic and beautiful. So that, of course, is a lot of other people's land that's taken. We also discovered that a map of our property, as so many other people in the rural area, on the map were little circles drawn, and you asked them, what do those circles represent? And they said, oh, that means it's a possibility of an endangered species on your property. And we said, did someone actually come on our land and see an endangered species? No, it's just the possibility of endangered species habitat. Well, just because of those circles being on your land, that lowers your property value. And you probably can't even sell it if you want to. So far, we haven't tried selling it. But all these things are absolute fictitious. There's no endangered species. Really, the true endangered species is man. And we are becoming more endangered all the time with their taking of our property rights. So that is just one aspect, is the changing of your use of your land through a general plan. We discovered that general plan is going across the nation. You just go to the American Planning Association and you find the same general plan for every county. You just have to tweak it, give it the name of Sonoma County or wherever you live, and there's your general plan. And when I had to speak on this back in Washington, D.C., I could see all of the people's heads nodding in the audience. So they were facing the same situation. And then they tried to take your property by rezoning it. So maybe your land was originally zoned for agricultural use. Now you discover that they have given you a new zoning and you can't use it for that anymore.
Yeah, it happened to me where in a place that I lived, and that was, you know, probably 15 years ago. I mean, they've been at this a while.
Yes, they have. And it really all, I think, got a huge start with Agenda 21, which was 1992. I think some of it was going on beforehand, but ever since 1992, there's been a big push to get people off their rural land and into the cities where they can be stacked and packed. I attended a hearing that was back in September in Sacramento where Congressman Tom McClintock and another Congressman, Wally Huger, were there to hear these testimonies by various farmers and ranchers that lived on property inside the forested areas, and they testified how the department, the U.S. Forestry Service, were deliberately trying to drive them off their land with enormous fees and with enormous restrictions, and they could no longer even get to their land. They were tearing up the roads, and when, after McClintock heard these statements for about an hour, he finally said, I can't understand what the purpose behind this is other than, do you truly believe that you are being forced off your land in the rural areas so you will be forced to move to the cities where you can be stacked and packed and more easily controlled? And they said, yes, that is the only answer that makes any sense.
Okay, when they started closing off these roads and whatever, were they coming up with all kinds of, you know, wonderful, healy-feely reasons that sounded just great, that they were doing it for everybody's good and whatever? Or were they just closing them?
Originally they would use some fictitious reason. Here in Sonoma County, they're telling us they just don't have enough money to take care of all of the roads. So they just have to use selectivity as to what roads they will get rid of the potholes in, and the rest are just going to be allowed to deteriorate.
And how about if they would play certain groups off of other groups and say, well, you know, this group wants to use it and this group wants to use it, but they can't, you know, one group doesn't want the other group to use it. And so, you know, we're going to close it off because of, you know, that sort of thing. Or do you have, or do you have wilderness areas in your part of it?
And that's part of the plan, too. I'm sure you're probably familiar with the Wildlands Project.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we have seen, I saw probably a copy of the Wildlands Project about 15 years ago. We had Michael Kaufman come and speak for us, and I thought, oh, this is so far-fetched. It could not possibly be. Well, now you see it's really coming into play, and there's a new map that I saw just recently called the connectivity map, and it shows how they have already designated these various areas as connectivity routes for animals. The humans will have to be in their human settlements, but the animals get to have these connectivity trails between or all across the state of California. And it also shows exactly the same, the red area where human people will not be able to be. No human can even set foot on it. And then a yellow area where you can have little corridors of some human activity. The green area is where human habitation is, and we're going to be there like little islands. But the animals can freely roam wherever it is. Well, part of this 100-foot setback on the creeks, they're called riparian corridors. So they're corridors for animals, so they can freely roam wherever they want to, but you can't do anything with your land. And that's kind of all is shown on this most recent map I've seen, this connectivity map. So it's amazing how they're doing this. And up in Siskiyou County, I don't know if you've heard about that, but they're trying to bring down 4 dams.
Oh, yeah.
And we were there last October for a big rally in support of these people. There were 1,000 of us gathered, and there was a wonderful presentation, and then a panel of 8 sheriffs from various counties who all said that they will not allow this to happen. They will not allow these federal agents to come in and destroy these dams, and they'll stand on the dams themselves if needs be. And it was just so exciting to hear these sheriffs stand up for their oath of office and for the Constitution and for the fact they realize that their job is to protect their citizens. And it used to be they would protect their citizens against criminals and outlaws. Well, the federal government now has become the criminals and the outlaws. I wrote an article about that called The Wild, Wild West with a whole new set of outlaws, and it's exactly what we're facing. But their goal is to turn the entire Siskiyou County into this red area where there will be no human habitation, and that's what the map shows.
So they're taking some of the most fertile areas of the country that have been like the breadbasket of this country, and they're going to take away the water rights and development or the cultivation rights and things like that.
That's right, and also to destroy their ability to even have water. You know, the Klamath River provides irrigation for all of these farmers up in Siskiyou County, and once the dams are destroyed, then that water will sometimes will be a little trickle, or sometimes it'll be a flood, and they're going to make it so restricting. Also, the dams provide hydraulic electricity for them. Of course, that'll be gone too, and they're already upping their electrical costs in expectation for it. But they've done an amazing job of fighting it off, and the Secretary of Interior finally backed down and said that he's going to let Congress make the decision. He could have done, just with a stroke of the pen, brought down the dams, but he's backing down and saying that he's going to allow Congress to make that decision, and hopefully we have some decent congressmen who will not allow that to happen. But the wording, you know, they say reclamation. They're reclaiming the Klamath River. and they're pretending that they're doing it for the sake of the little salmon who just can't go over those dams and spawn. Well, most of them have already done their spawning before the dams happen, and they have other ways to, they would create some tunnel that the dam, the fish could go through. You know, they were willing to do all sorts of accommodations, but it would cost so much less than tearing down the dams. So you know that that's not the real reason they're doing it. They're not there to save salmon. They're there to take property and ruin people's lives and force people off the rural areas. And we see the same thing happening with desert protection areas and other areas of protection for ducks and geese and whatever excuse they can come up with. And so much of our land now is going back to being owned by the federal government, and that was never what our founding fathers wanted. When they created this nation, they put Washington, D.C. in a 10-mile radius, and that was it. That was the only federal land that the federal government was supposed to have. But because of the establishment of national parks, starting with Yellowstone, little by little, the federal government has gotten land away from private states. And now, just about every state, I think California, half of our state belongs to the federal government. 86% of Nevada belongs to the federal government. I think Idaho, it's now like 60%. Each year, it goes up and up. So they're really succeeding. And the Wildlands Project, as you probably know, they're asking for 50% of our nation, of the land on, of the United States of America, to go back into pre-Columbian times. And when you first hear that, you thought, oh, that's so far-fetched.
If it's pre-Columbian, then it's meant that we're not in, you know, included in that, right?
Yeah, well, the land will be just essentially 50% back to pre-Columbian times without man on it.
Right.
It just, and they're pretending this is all to be done to save Mother Earth and save the animals. And the sad thing is they're using these wild and ferocious animals to bring it to pass. They've allowed wolves to be put in Yellowstone Park now. Well, the wolves don't stay in Yellowstone Park. It's too high of an elevation. They go down to the farmers of Idaho and Wyoming and Montana and kill their sheep and their cattle. And I just recently saw a video of it. These wolves are not killing for food. They're killing because of the fun of it.
Yeah, they just take bites out of the other these animals and leave them.
That's right.
Right.
It's just tragic.
You know,
and if a farmer kills one of those animals, they have a collar on them that they can be traced remotely by a helicopter, and so they will know exactly where this dead wolf is. And the poor farmer will find himself under investigation. This happened to a farmer in Idaho, close to where I grew up, and I read about it in the Press Democrat, or not the Press Democrat, it was the Post Register of Idaho Falls. And this a farmer was just driving along and saw a wolf eating a little calf, and so he stopped and took out his rifle and killed the wolf and went on his way. Well, the next Sunday morning, the rancher that the property was on was visited by, I think it was like 10 FBI agents investigating to see if he was the one who killed the wolf, and they matched the bullet that was inside the wolf with the bullets that were inside this man's house. Fortunately, they did not match up. But can you believe that? That FBI would be investigating the death of a wolf? And these wolves were ones they brought in from Canada. They cost $250,000 per wolf.
Really?
Whoa. Outrageous.
Okay. So I think it was on the Nature Conservancy map that you can see an overlay of, you know, what's happening is there's kind of like an incrementalism thing. And so you have, you know, your wildland areas, you have your land trusts, you have your conservation easements, you have your military bases and lands, you have your state controlled lands, and you start seeing this overlay of vast amounts of land in our country that is now under some sort of control, and it's shrinking and it's growing, and Nature Conservancy is growing hugely, not only in this country but around the world and in the lands that they're acquiring. And so are you familiar with this? Have you seen these maps?
I haven't, but that makes very good sense.
I'll have to send it to you so you can
see. Right, I would appreciate that. And so you can kind of see how that map matches up with the whole Wildlands Project map.
Right, because, I mean, some of these animal corridor things that they've drawn here, I mean, it's like, you know, these animals don't read maps, you know, they go wherever they want, and those,
exactly.
And they change their paths. So, you know, that could be real, really interesting, and when they, you know, see evidence of this, they could, you know, now start designated wherever the animals come through is, you know, a corridor, and then now it's, you know, got restrictions. And when it comes to the water situation, you're finding, what's happening out there? If it hasn't happened here, it's going to happen here. I mean, it's because it's happening all over the country, right?
Oh, it is. And you've heard what happened with the central area of California, where it was San Joaquin County, especially, was where they were growing all of the wonderful fruit trees and almond trees, and but they relied on the water coming from the Delta. And because of supposedly an endangered Delta smelt that needed fresh water to keep it alive, the Delta was being dumped into the San Francisco Bay to keep this silly Delta smelt alive instead of allowing the water to go down to the San Joaquin Valley and Central Valley so these wonderful fruit trees could have water. And that went on for about 3 summers. So, of course, now those fruit trees are just dead when you drive highway.
Oh, that's sad.
You just see it's so sad. And you see signs that say this desert wasteland is compliments of the federal government. And it's really like a dust bowl. And it's so sad, especially when you realize that California used to be the breadbasket of the world. Who knows what it is now, but... And then what has happened with so many other parts of the country, the same thing is the water is being diverted to provide water for ducks and geese or for some endangered species or anything they can do to cause ranchers and farmers to leave their land. My sister and I inherited 500 acres of land from after our parents died up in Kilgore, Idaho, which is next to the Montana border. And we got a letter from a water master saying that essentially our water rights had been taken. So we made a trip up there to find out what had happened and found out that all of the water rights of all of the farmers and ranchers had been taken, which essentially was that they had the right to have this creek have water coming from a river so their cattle could be watered. Well, that was all being diverted now, and the water was being sent down to provide water for a wildlife refuge for ducks and geese.
Wow.
And before this happened, I had been telling my sister of all the things that I had been discovering and in my research and what I had seen, the false, ridiculous pseudoscience that was being taught in the public schools. And she told my husband she thought I needed therapy.
Well, I've got Orlene Curla. Is that, did I say it right then?
Yes, you did.
Ah, I had to do it phonetically to finally figure it out. And so I've got Arlene Curla, who's president of the Eagle Forum out in California. But what we're talking about is Agenda 21 and the various aspects of programs that are behind, that are built within this agenda. And it's about the control of our lives, and ultimately, what I'm seeing, and many of our others are talking about. I mean, when you're talking about shutting down the whole bread basket of this country, there's an agenda behind that. It isn't just a matter of some kind of spell. They're using excuses for the takings of the lands, and when you put a country in debt to the point that, you know, everybody is going to be indentured in some form or fashion, if they aren't already, which most of us probably are in some way, but that our lands are going to be up for sale, because, you know, they're making it look like they're saving the lands for us, but that isn't what it's about. It's
not at all. This whole concept of sustainable development, really nothing is going to be sustainable and nothing is going to be developed when they get finished with their entire agenda.
I consider it mentioned
the financial aspect of it. In my book, By Stealth and Deception, I have a whole chapter on the financial crises and how that was all carefully planned.
Right.
And you can just see that, and the fact that it's happening throughout the world. In the last chapter of my book, Just Say No to Big Brother Smart Meter, I talk about how they are planning to eventually make it so that we are a cashless society, that there will be, everyone will now have to have a credit card, but it won't be a credit card like what we're used to. It'll be an energy credit card. Have you heard anything about this?
I'm getting little glimmers, because it sounds like it's, you know, it's taken many forms. It may be implemented, you know, 8 or 10 different ways from what it's starting to look like to me. It may, you know, be consolidated at some point, but I'm hearing so many different things here and there about how this can work. So, but go ahead.
According to the research I've done, it all ties in with carbon credits.
Right.
And that's why they have to keep this myth of global warming going, because that's going to be our form of currency. It's not really a currency, but everyone will have their allotment on a little credit card of their allotted energy use for the month. And if they don't use up all of that allotted energy use, tough. It'll just be gone. There will be no way that anyone can accumulate wealth. And so they will just, you know, either use it all up or it will be gone. And that's why they want everyone to have a smart meter and have everyone connected to this global grid.
We've been in training with our little cellular cards that way, right? Haven't we?
Yes, that's right. Anyway, it was Patrick Wood. I don't know if you've ever had him as a guest.
I would like to. I'd love to.
He's the one who puts out, he discovered a book called Technocracy, back written in the 1930s. 1932, and so he has published a series of technocracy papers where he exposes all of this. But in this book called Technocracy, they had planned back in 1932. They knew they wouldn't have the technology then, but they knew someday they would, where they could have 24-hour surveillance of our homes. That's what the smart meter does. And everything that they had asked for back in the 1932 book, Patrick Wood said, has been fulfilled now.
Wow.
Through the smart meters and the smart grid. And so that was their plan way back then, and that was kind of the inspiration for George Orwell to write the book 1984, where Big Brother is keeping an eye on you through your television. We discovered from an email coming from Germany that I put in my book that they already have found out in Germany that because the appliances already have chips in them so that the smart meter can talk to the appliance, the smart meter can tell what television program people are watching, and they can also tell if you're not even watching a television program but just a DVD, and even say what DVD it is. So that just sounds a little too much Big Brother and too much 1984 George Orwell book.
Right. But do you get into the aspects of what, you know, with the health and genetic changes that they have, or just like through the GMOs and
Yes, I'm very concerned about that. And in my book about the smart meters, I have a whole chapter on how this pulsed radiation is affecting people's health. And I also mention, you've probably heard this from Deborah Tavares, but I have read that 18-page military document that showed how they were actually using these various microwaves and EMF waves and radio waves to test on men, using us as guinea pigs. And so they already know the capability of these radio waves that are inside the smart meter, they know that they do harm. And if they up the ante on them, they can really do harm. So I believe that this is all one more aspect of population control.
Right. It's amazing that they have done such an incredible job of tying this in down to everything on a local, national, international basis. I mean, they've left nothing untouched, anywhere from air, water, economics, food, you name it. They want to control it all. And humans are equated to the level of animals. And
in fact, some of them even call us a bacteria and a virus that needs to be wiped out. They forget that they are human, too. I guess they think that they are superhuman. They are gods, and we're far beneath them.
Well, they use the terminology, and they start, it's kind of like, you know, you stand around people that have such a negative aspect of, you know, what life is and its value and whatever, and you start seeing that when you are around that, then humans have a tendency to start picking on itself and looking for the weak ones or the, you know, sick ones, and then there's a reason for this and a reason for that, and that you know, life isn't worth, life.
So if you no longer believe in a creator and believe that we are children of God, then it's like humanity doesn't really have anything special about it. We are no better than any other species. And that's essentially what our children are being taught in the public schools as well, which is very sad. In fact, they're being taught that we are less than the other species because we're the ones that have harmed the universe and harmed the world. And what really woke me up to start doing the research that I've done the past 20 years, it was 1992, and I was reading an article, a letter to the editor in our paper written by a 14-year-old girl who went to the same middle school that my son went to. And her letter to the editor said that because of what she had been taught in her environmental science class, she was ashamed of being human and wished that Homo sapiens had never been created. And I was just appalled by this, and I read it to my 17-year-old son who was there having breakfast with me. I said, can you believe what this girl has written? She's ashamed of being human and wished that Homo sapiens had never been created. And he said, well, it's true, Mother. Our world would be a better place if man were not on it. So then I found out my own son had been indoctrinated.
Well, but again, this is one of the things that we have to peel back, you know, the multiple layers that are indoctrinating us with, because ultimately we're being told, you know, we're the scourge. But what it really is about is, again, getting us to where we have no value. We're willing to submit and be controlled and manipulated while they take control of all the lands. They sell off our commons, our properties, and to whomever, whatever corporate and all countries and municipalities and whatever are corporate, so they can sell and buy and trade among themselves, but the humans don't have any rights.
That's right, and they're teaching our children that anyone that does own property is greedy and selfish. You can't believe how many times I've heard kids tell me that. So then, of course, if you've gone through that indoctrination, you're willing to give up your land, all for the common good.
And where do we know that?
How many times I've heard the term common good used, especially fighting this Agenda 21.
And where does that come from? Who's, is that very Marxist?
It is very much Marxist. In fact, there's a wonderful young man here in the Napa Valley that is a member of we formed a task force to fight Agenda 21, and he's discovered that the word communitarian, in fact, the word community, all stem from the same communitarian law, which is really just another word for Marxism, for communism. And when you study their writings, they're always saying that we must be selfless. We must become unselfish and give up for the common good. They love to use the common good. And I don't know if you have heard of the organization called ICLEI.
Oh, yes.
Well, the vice president of ICLEI, the national board of ICLEI for our nation, was asked by a woman, where does the private property rights come in your concept? And he said, private property rights have to take a back seat to the common good. That was his exact quote. So they believe that any private ownership of property is selfish, and we should be willingly, happily giving that up for service to the community, service to the common good. And when a young child has been indoctrinated into such teachings their whole life, they go along with it. And they say that probably 90% of our professors at our universities are Marxists now, and so few of our teachers in the public schools are teaching true American history and letting the kids really understand how great a nation this is and how wonderful the free enterprise system is. So they think that that's just something terrible, just like the Occupy movement thinks the free enterprise system is terrible. So we are facing so many serious problems. And well, I personally believe all those problems are stemming from Agenda 21, because that's their goal is to...
Well, that was the way that they implemented this, one of the ways that they implemented the Marxist plan, although they've, you know, when you go back and look at the work of Bernadine Smith and some of these others that have been sounding the alarm going way back, Charlotte Isabey, some of these others.
Yes, I'm so glad you know Bernadine Smith.
Oh, she's incredible.
She sent me 2 huge packets of information. She
oh, yeah.
found out that I was writing this book, and it was such valuable information. I put so much of what she sent me in my book. That's great. When did you discover her?
I caught her about 3 o'clock in the morning. it was on a rerun of John Stadtmiller's program, I guess. And, but I was lucky enough, I don't know how I lucked out, but I was quite lucky that I was able to even do an interview with her.
That's wonderful. And Charlotte Isabit was a guest in my home twice, and we've had her speak for us, and she sent me all sorts of valuable information, too, that I have in my book.
Oh yeah, I've got to interview her a couple of times. My favorite interview I lost, and could have kicked myself. It was once my phone didn't record both sides, and I wish I would have kept it anyways because it kept hers.
She's a great lady. And,
oh yes.
Well, I have a chapter in my book by Stealth and Deception called "Big Brother is Watching You." And it just how many of our freedoms we have lost because of 9/11 and the Patriot Act. And she was able to give me information to find out that really this Patriot Act had been written long before 9/11.
Right.
And the people that wrote it were the same people that helped write the Real ID Act that would have turned our driver's licenses into a national ID card. And they were former members of the KGB as well as the Stasi police of East Germany. So we essentially have incorporated their absolute tyrannical philosophies into some of our American documents now. And it's just amazing how this nation has been transformed.
And without essentially firing a shot, we will, you know, become this, you know, one big global happy family, so they say. But ultimately, and this has been kind of shown in other countries where they've tried to, you know, start this model, is that it isn't about, you know, the common good. It's about the guys at the top that get to control the rest of everybody else and keep the, you know, the good stuff for them and leave little for the rest.
Exactly. It's just like the animal farm said, some animals are all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than other animals. And they talk about, oh, the communist system is so wonderful because there will be no rich and no poor. Everyone is just all equal, but not at all. There's a huge upper crust that gets to have all the money, and the rest get to be equally poor.
Well, I'll have to admit that, you know, I kind of bought into some of this when I was younger and whatever, and it looked better than, you know, what some of the other systems that were out there, until you start really digging into the deceptions that are taking place, and they've been lying to us for, you know, millennia.
They really have. How did you first find out about all of this?
Oh my goodness, I read the book Cloak of Green by that was about. I was trying to find information on Maurice Strong because he's, you know, he has the box. Had the Baca or has the Baca,
right.
Grand, and that's not very far from where I live.
Oh.
And I kept hearing things since the late 70s about this place and him, and I had no idea who he was, and that was when I read that book and that I realized that what was going on with a lot of these non-governmental organizations and these so-called, philanthropic groups weren't always what, you know, what they appeared to be. So
that's right. Well, that's interesting. It was the environmental shock reading this young girl's letter that woke me up, and I guess that Cloak of Green woke you up.
And then I read the People's History of the United States, you know, and I know that one was not even near complete, but it really did, you know, make me start going. I mean, I'd always been suspicious, and I never trusted the government, believe me, but since the Vietnam War, but it's the one that really woke me up to start looking and studying and researching, and that's, you know.
Oh, that's great. How long have you had your radio program?
Oh, it's about 5 years.
And that's wonderful.
Yes, so. I've been lucky enough to interview some incredible people, and you're one of them. I mean, that just have so much knowledge and active in trying to educate the public, you know, about.
Thank you. It's a hard thing to do. I can't even wake my own family up. As I was mentioning, I did get my sister to finally believe that what I had been telling her over the years was true because she saw it with her own eyes, but. Unless people experience this themselves, they just kind of go on in la-la land, I'm afraid.
Well, you want to trust, you know. You want to trust, and you want to, do the right thing, and you're being told you're doing the right thing, and you want to become a part of the community, and, you know, it's not until you start asking questions and you start saying, well, wait a minute, now, you told me this, but, you know, why this, this, and this? And then you get, you know, shined on and whatever, and you start digging a little deeper and start looking at their, reading a little bit of their laws or, you know, start, you know, looking at what's taking place around us. I mean, one of the things that always struck me is, how do you have peace and you keep creating war? I mean,
Exactly. And the United Nations, that was the whole purpose it was created, supposedly, was to end all wars.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since it was created, we've had 150 wars.
Right.
So they always are telling us one thing and doing another. And
right. And so did your spouse go along with this information, or did they?
Yes, he for the most part believes what I tell him. He doesn't do anything with that information. I guess he thinks that I can do it all. Or what about yours?
Oh, he was pretty. He and I had our definite discussions, and he had his ideas about things. But he was very supportive of me doing what I've been doing. So
that's wonderful.
Yeah, but you know, he definitely didn't agree. Out of it. Because he thought I was in conspiracy and whatever, but you know, when you look at the towers fall down and you're going, something smells fishy here.
I have a whole section in my book about all the things that are very fishy about 9/11. But the thing about my sweet husband, he did read the first chapter of my book because it's all about him growing up in Germany.
Ah.
But he won't read anything more in my book, and none of my children will read it either, which is really hard.
Well, you know, the sad part about it is that, you know, if they don't educate themselves now, that information may not be there for them down the road.
That's right.
Because they're messing with it. They're trying to erase history. They're trying to rewrite it. And unless you're paying attention, you know, I mean, there's things that I know I read on the internet, and then I go back and look to read it again, and I'm going, this ain't what I read.
That's true, and some things are just not there anymore. They've been taken away.
Right, and they're gonna continue to do that.
And that's why I believe we definitely still need hard copy books.
Right, but they've been messing with those too, and that was one of the things. I mean, I was even doing research on court records and found out, you know, that stuff gets carried on into perpetuity, and I knew that the information was wrong, you know. When you're looking at plats and things like this and knowing that, you know, something's recorded this way in their records, and you look at the plats and they don't even match.
Wow.
So,
boy, this is so sad. Well, that's why I entitled my book By Stealth and Deception, because there is so much going on.
Yeah, so, I mean, what I'm saying by even bringing that up is saying that this didn't, you know, just happen now. This has been going on for a long time. And those who've controlled information, that's why information has been controlled, because that's how they control the people.
That's right.
Yeah, so... You know, Orlene, I appreciate you, you know, doing this last minute, and that it did get a little confusing in getting this set up, but I hope we can do this again. And
well, I hope so, too. I've enjoyed talking to you, Melody. What is your last name?
Hallett.
Hallett.
Yes.
Great.
And I'm sure we'll be in contact, and I'll try to send you a couple of those things that we were talking about on the mapping and the like, because we've definitely been looking in a lot of the same issues, and I'm hoping that, you know, a person here or there, you know, decides to do a little bit of their own research and not take us at our word and do some, you know. One of the things that I like to say is it's not what you do, but that you do, because once you get started, you're going to find out everything is so needs to be attention paid to, if I stated that incorrectly, but, you know, everything.
Well, I agree. That's so true. And then you begin to get the puzzle pieces to fit together, and things begin to make sense, and get your questions answered. Yeah. And it may not be pleasant what you're finding out, but it's so important to find the truth.
Right. And so, you know, if people want to know about us being able to, you know, have a, what's the term I want, something constructive come out of it and find some answers. And have you found any answers?
Well, the last chapter of my book, both books, I give things that we can do to prepare, and I believe there is still hope. If I didn't, I would not still be in this battle. And just like I mentioned, these wonderful sheriffs in Siskiyou County, that gave me hope. Mm-hmm. And to see all the good vigilant people that are still like you, and people out there exposing the truth, trying to help save our nation. And I'm excited about the people I've met in the various Tea Party groups that I've been asked to speak for. And I think there's been, mainly because of Obama, lots of people have gotten involved and activated. And so there is hope.
Well, it's, you know, they'll give us another one. They just might have a different party.
Yes.
A letter, but...
But I do believe that we're facing some really rough times ahead, and I definitely believe we need to be prepared, maybe even to go off the grid,
mm-hmm.
to have enough food and water to take care of ourselves for maybe some long, long time.
Well,
so it's not a hope that we can just think everything is going to be hunky-dory. We've got to do our part to prepare.
Right, because if we look at the other countries that have gone through similar circumstances like that, it isn't necessarily that they, you know, they went through a smooth transition. It's not meant to be a smooth transition. It's meant to have population control involved. So
that's right.
That means killing off a number of them. That's what these wars have always been about. So.
That's so true.
Yeah, so, you know, again, Orlene, I want to thank you and for staying up late, although you're a little hour earlier than I am. But
oh, you're really up. Well, you're very welcome. Thank you, Melody, for having me.
Okay, thanks a
lot. All right, good night.
Good night. Okay, that was Orlene Kurla.